aspect of what is available today, all the employability skills components, it will come to around, nearly around 50 to 100 modules available in English, Hindi, Bangla, Kannada. It's right now available in 8 Indian languages. Also, of course, global as well. So that is the piece on democratizing access to skilling. For it's more like a B2C product available for everyone.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast, Unusual Suspects. I am your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies and ecstasies, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YT Music, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, I'm delighted to have Mr. Sunil Dahiya. Mr. Dahiya is the Executive Vice President Skilling at the Wadhwani Foundation. The global not-for-profit is committed to accelerating economic development by driving job creation through large-scale initiatives in skilling, entrepreneurship, government digital transformation, and innovation and research, among others. Mr. Dahiya has demonstrated dynamic leadership in his extensive professional career spanning over 35 years. He has a remarkable track record of leading the digital transformation product series in the IT and ITES space. He plays a crucial role in driving impactful skilling initiatives for India and Southeast Asia, aligning with the foundation's mission to create jobs and spur economic growth. His visionary approach has contributed to the successful placements of an impressive 200,000 students. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Sunil. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thanks, Gaurav. Glad to be on the show.
You know, Sunil, let's start off with a very basic question, which is fundamental nonetheless. And it has been a question over the last 20 years or so, and will continue to remain a question over the next 20 years or so, which is about India's demography. About two-thirds of India's population is under the age group of 35, and that dividend, demographic dividend, as it were, will remain in place for at least 1.5 to 2 decades. It presents a unique opportunity. At the same time, however, what it also does is that it is, you know, it's adding a lot many more people. Millions of people are joining the queue of job hopefuls every year. While India being the most populous country, it's a huge market. And we also have the world's strongest and the biggest young population at the employable age. There's also a question of skilling. How is Wadhwani Foundation's skilling mission leveraging this potential to create impact, Sunil?
Yeah, this is a very relevant and very pertinent question when it comes from a demographic dividend standpoint. While as a country, we are very well placed at this moment. But coming into the, while this opportunity exists and how Wadhwani Foundation is trying to address this opportunity, I should start from one of our key imperatives or the mission of the foundation when it comes to skilling. One of the key aspects which we want to drive home is ensuring that an individual is able to get into a family-sustaining job. And when I say family-sustaining job, it is not the job which they start from, but it's the job which is progressive, which ensures that they gradually progress in their career and are able to sustain, are able to support a family of 4 individuals in their family. That's one aspect. The second aspect is Wadhwani Foundation is very closely working with the vulnerable segment. So when I say vulnerable segment, moving from schools to ITIs to polytechnics to undergraduates, But when I say this, all these segments, the important aspect is not only the segment, but also the dropout all along. You know, we all know this, that, you know, in India, if 10 students pass out from class 12, only 3 move into formal education. 7 of them are lost after that. So ensuring that the dropouts are taken care of and all along the journey. So that's the vision of the foundation, to one, ensure support the vulnerable students, two, to ensure that they all get into family supporting wages.
You know, Sunil, there is also a question that is dominating the discourse now, so far as employment, employability, jobs and skilling is concerned. And almost every day we come across headlines and news where companies are laying off people because those jobs have been made redundant by artificial intelligence. We have seen, various artificial intelligence tools actually taking away various functions which were otherwise done by humans. Technology, especially AI, and there's no gainsaying this fact, that is playing a very transformative role in bridging the skills gap also. So while it is taking away jobs, it's also actually enabling a lot of skills gap to be bridged quickly. Now, from your point of view, how is the foundation integrating AI, machine learning, and data analytics into skilling efforts to future-proof the workforce? Because what we are doing now, we may be completely irrelevant 5 years from now. So we need to future-proof ourselves, particularly the youth. So how is the foundation going about achieving this or contributing to this, Sunil?
Yes. So this is, again, one of the key question which today comes up whenever we address various forums. One aspect is the AI piece itself. Other aspect is the flip side of AI piece, all the myths which are around AI, and that comes in. So let me put it from the foundation perspective and also from the ecosystem perspective. So let me first move from the ecosystem perspective, employer perspective. Let me go from there, from the demand side. Now, if you look at it from the demand side, definitely anything which is going to make efficiency at the workplace will definitely be, you know, it will find its place in the employer ecosystem because it's increasing the productivity. So that's one at a very high level statement. And AI definitely is here to really impact various such aspects where it will increase the productivity at the workplace. Now, does that really mean that, you know, does this mean only loss of jobs? At one point and in the initial part, it might look like, oh, this job is not going to be existing. For example, once the LLM models came across, the whole content roles were rough. There were big challenge on those roles. However, let's look at one step ahead. Now, when you look at it from the evolution of AI, so let's look at it AI in different perspectives. For example, today, if me and you are discussing about AI in retail space, AI in healthcare space, AI in automobile space, AI in all the different sectors of hiring, we will see it is just at a very, very, very nascent stage. So the use cases of AI is going to impact different sectors, no doubt job roles, but job roles to make them more productive. So on one side, we will see that the certain job roles will perish. But on the other side, the new job roles will emerge. So from an overall perspective, this is going to always remain in a way where which are the jobs which are moving off, and which are the jobs which are emerging. So from that standpoint, today's youth and the ecosystem has to be very careful of, you know, the aspect of keep on learning new skills in your domain, which you are already in, and see how can you make it better using AI, because AI is going to only add more productivity to the current job, and it automatically promises scale. So as it scales and more productivity, so new jobs roles would emerge. But however, you know, the whole aspect is still, some of them would go, but a lot more will come in. That's one aspect. The second aspect, which is very specific in the question about how does the foundation see it? So we tried now inroads into making the learning or the education itself very powerful using AI. So maybe we are the very first foundation in India, at least, you know, where we came up with introduction of co-pilots for learners, more from an aspect of, imagine the co-pilot called My Tutor, and this tutor is available to every learner on his mobile, in his or her own language, in his or her own learning speed, and the person can ask any query, get the answer to any query in their own language, at their own time, and completely at self. If they need, they can do, they just need a headphone and a mobile phone in the hand. So what it does is, it gives the power of learning to individuals. So the personalized learning has become so much more powerful using AI. And this has happened because of the AI Copilot. Second example, very important I want to share, is the interview preparation. Any student across the country, anywhere, coming from any demography, wants to prepare for the interview. Here there is an AI pilot, co-pilot, who prepares you for interview, and you just need a headphone and your mobile. So that way, the way it is evolving now is, we'll see many more co-pilots emerging, many more action pilots emerging, and many more conversational AI models emerging. And the beauty of this is that it can reach to the last mile in the country. The only requirement is the connectivity. But if that is there, then language is no more a barrier. Technology, from that, the easiness to understand is no more a barrier. So that aspect, you know, AI really promises very well in the education sector. So we are not only working on bringing AI at a learner level, but also at a trainer level. So both the training ecosystem and the learning ecosystem get benefited from this. That's my response, Gaurav.
You know, Sunil, just moving on from that, but, you know, there's reports that probably there could be a projected net loss of about 14 million jobs by 2027. Yeah. And, you know, about an estimated 87%, that is about almost 9 out of 10 companies are at the same time anticipating a skills gap. While you briefly alluded to it, how can we actually align skill development in market demands? And what is the role that the foundation is playing in this? But the reason I ask you this question is that, how can you actually go about accurately anticipating the kind of job demand that the market will throw up, where technology is evolving very fast, and technology is also, and many functions are also becoming rapidly obsolete?
So in this, from this aspect, let's look at it from first from the actually what is happening today is, because most of the IT industry per se, if I take one sector called ITES, now that's one of the first one, you know, to see the impact which is happening. At the same time, when you look at most of the millions of job, which is net loss aspect, which you touched upon, you know, that's currently being seen in the IT/ITS sector as one of the major contributor in that area, because, you know, all that which was done in you know, through coding is now available on press of keys. So that is one aspect. But on the other side, you know, with the aspect of thinking through the new possibilities, or creative thinking approach, is opening up many and many millions of jobs together. If we break this up into various subsectors and sectors, we will come across that there are sectors which today are not even touched, and those sectors will produce those many millions of jobs more. But at the same time, the traditional job roles, which we know, you know, maybe some very well, for example, today, if you look at it, a prompt engineer versus a software developer. Now, software developer is slowly is moving the downward path, but a prompt engineer is moving the upward path. But as creativity comes in and the aspect takes better shape, we will see all the loss from one side will work on improving the other kind of job role on the other side. So from that standpoint, it's important from the foundation perspective and from the ecosystem perspective to always be vigilant about what other skills does a person need to know to stay relevant. So it definitely forces an aspect of agility in learning. And that's the key mantra today, you know, to continue further in the working in the industry.
You know, Sunil, you did speak about the foundation's skilling program and how it is democratizing access to skilling. You know, if you can elaborate on the kind of offerings that the program is making and also the eligibility requirement, just for the benefit of our listeners and potential candidates who would like to benefit from the foundation's programs. Sunil?
Sure. So on the democratized access to skilling, this is we can just see it in a perspective of on-demand skilling. Anybody needs to learn a skillet, a small piece, or a complete course, or a piece of course, or maybe half the course. The whole objective here is make the skillets available to students in very consumable, bite-sized content, which can be made available on demand basis. So let me give you a few examples. I think that will make it more clear. So as we work with whenever we look at the customer segment, there is a customer segment which learns soft skills, employability skills in the classroom. Another customer segment which learns soft skills and employability skills in hybrid mode. You know, half of 50% they learn online, 50% they come to the classroom or live virtual classrooms. Now the democratized function is primarily a self-serve function, where any user anywhere can learn the module at their own time, at their own pace, and that can happen in bite-sized content, whatever is their need. So if I give you an example, take a platform like large platforms like Swayam, which is one of the largest platforms for all degree students in India. Similarly, if you look at SID, Skill India Digital Hub, this is again one online platform for all students who are either unemployed or who missed after class 12 or maybe class 10 and they want to come back into the main ecosystem. So what we make available for them as a product is all the components of the employability skills are available to them in bite-sized pieces, which is there for them to consume, download, and we also give them micro certifications for that. So from the aspect of what is available today, all the employability skills components, it will come to around nearly around 50 to 100 modules available in English, Hindi, Bangla, Kannada. It's right now available in 8 Indian languages, also of course global as well. So that is the piece on democratizing access to skilling. For it's more like a B2C product available for everyone.
So Sunil, also, while foundations like yours are doing very good work and contributing immensely to the skilling, but there's also the role of the government that we cannot ignore or bypass. Also the role of the academia and also the role of the industry, because the industry is the recipient of, or rather the ones that is creating jobs, and also private players. So what is the role that you envision for them that they should be playing in creating a more collaborative ecosystem for skilling? Because if you're working in silos, then the results will at best be suboptimal. How can partnerships actually maximize impact? Sunil?
Yeah, I think I like to answer this question because I just came across an example. And maybe that explains how beautifully all four key stakeholders, government, academia, industry, and private players work together. This is an example. Let me not name the city. This is from Philippines. So there is Cebu as one of the city in there. Now the government decided that Cebu should be the next tourist destination in Philippines. Now, right from school education to the technical education to the college education and to industry. Take an example: hospitality and tourism became part of every curriculum starting from grade 9 onwards in the country. Tourism and hospitality became an integral part of any graduating students in that city. And government is now setting up many, many more hotels, as well as many, many cruises and stuff like that around the city. So what does it do is, while it is all led by the government in the beginning, and then the ecosystem starts falling in. So now coming to the answer to the question. So from the role that government can play, government typically is only an enabler who actually can, you know, just give the direction. But the key role is with the industry and academia and the private players, where the industry has to become a very active knowledge partner with the academia. There are many countries and examples where the industry and academia, you know, they are not at the best. Industry will keep on saying, no, the academy is producing candidates which are not good. And, you know, academia will say, we do the best, but industry keeps, well, they don't understand our students. So the key aspect is, can industry play the role of a knowledge partner with the academia in very structured way and very integrated way? Is it possible that the trainers ecosystem have an exposure to the industry? Because many times the trainer ecosystem is you know, long, they are not updated. They don't even know what is happening in future. That aspect is between industry and academia. And government is more of an enabler who can enable this to happen. And the private partners, when you say the private players, now private players could be in skilling space, private players could be in employment space, private players could be also in the, you know, more from the industry, the employer space. So private player per se are those who take the early examples and create the success model, which then can be replicated in the entire ecosystem. So from that perspective, it's a combined approach between all four of them. But definitely industry has to be at the center stage, who has to be really working on what is happening, what is coming forward, what is moving out. And this knowledge transfer to the academia at almost, you know, 5x the speed what happens today, that's the more important aspect, you know, from the ecosystem standpoint.
Sunil, can you share some stories of lives that the Wadhwani Foundation has transformed through its skills program? Just one or two use case examples, maybe, for the benefit of our listeners.
Sure. Actually, you know, of course, I have so many of them, but there are some of them which really, you know, we have students working in Chromas and Reliances, Taco Bells, various things. But I'd like to share something, you know, from a different perspective here. There's an example which I want to share of Coimbatore, and this happened where I happened to be invited in a conference in Coimbatore. And by the way, this conference in Coimbatore was being organized by the Jharkhand government. And I must share this because this itself shows transformation. Why was this conference in Coimbatore? Because, and that's where the success story will come in, 3,500 girls who learned textile in Jharkhand, and we had, we were fortunate that we integrated our employability skills curriculum with all the girls there. And they joined the textile industry in Coimbatore. And the objective was that they will work here for, 2 to 3 years and then move back to Jharkhand with government supporting them to start up their own business in that, in Jharkhand. But the key aspect here from a placement standpoint and the family sustaining wages standpoint is this, that almost 80% of these girls who moved from Jharkhand to Coimbatore, within a span of at least 30% of them were team leaders in less than a year's time. And that is something which they attributed to their confidence and employability skills, which was imparted to them. Of course, there are many, many smaller stories, and whether it is Faraha, who is from TISS working in Minda, you know, today she is a team leader in just 1.5 years' time, or it is, Akhtar, who is working in CCD in Bangalore, again moved just in around a year's time. He's a floor manager already with them. So there are many, many stories like this, but I think the first one which I thought is very significant, which shows transformation at a state level, is I thought, let me share that.
Finally, Sunil, you know, what message would you like to share with our listeners on how they can support and contribute to skilling initiatives across the country?
I think finally, I would like to say that two things: skilling, reskilling, and multi-skilling is the need of the hour for any candidate either working or going to be joining the workforce. That's one key message. Second aspect, which we are hearing now, and it is going to take even better shapes, which is AI plus HI is the future. So artificial intelligence plus human intelligence will ultimately evolve the future growth prospect. And to do all this, agility in learning and agility in adopting, agility word would apply everywhere. And one last piece I would say is all the learners need to keep on ensuring that creative thinking is the mantra for the next decade. That's the message from me.
Thank you, Sunil. Thank you so much for sharing your deep insights and perspective on a variety of issues, from India's demographic dividend, on the need to skill large number of people that are joining the queue of hopefuls every year, and how AI, while actually taking away a large number of jobs, is actually enabling the creation of many more jobs, and how academia, industry, the government, foundations such as yours and private sector can collaborate to bridge India's skills gap. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. Thank you.